She bold, she real,
and she's definitely ready.
Hey guys, it's your girl Smiley B, and we are back with another bold episode. Hey guys, today it is just me. Eva G had some work scheduling conflict today, so she will not be recording with me today. However, today I have here with me Jeremy Kelsey. He is a drug counselor and the founder of Every 11 Minutes nonprofit organization. Hey Jeremy, how you feeling today?
Amazing. Amazing. Just got done with this total eclipse, and I was promised it was going to be the show of the century. It's not going to happen again till 2044. And I went out back with my chair and my glasses on, and I saw absolutely nothing.
What? Yeah. Nothing. Oh my gosh, I feel so bad. It was such an experience. Me, my sister, my niece, and my sons, all of us, like my whole family, we were like out front. We had our glasses. We were kind of sharing. We had about five pair of glasses. We were rotating around, but it was definitely experience. It was definitely a sight to see. So I hate that you had to miss that.
I noticed it was a shade darker, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's never what you expect, right?
Right. Yeah, it got dark over here. I'm in Ohio for you guys listening, and Jeremy's over in California. So definitely different time zones, different experience, but it did get dark over here to the point where my street lights came on in my complex. So I was like, oh, wow. Yeah.
And we're still here. It wasn't the end of the world. So
absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. Well, we're happy to have you here today on the Shiboku podcast. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah. You want to kind of introduce yourself a little bit?
Oh God, what do you even say here? My name's Jeremy, Jeremy Kelsey. I am from Sonoma County, California. I'm a recovering addict. My drugs of choice were pretty much everything, but at the end, I was shooting meth and heroin. Then it turned into fentanyl. And I've overdosed a number of times. My last overdose was too close for comfort. I'm very blessed that I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I decided to just do a 180 on my life and do the exact opposite, changed everything. And now I've been a drug counselor for 3 years. I started a nonprofit called Every 11 Minutes. At the time, every 11 minutes, someone died from an opioid overdose. It's up to every 5 minutes. It's every 5 minutes now, but...
Oh, wow. Are you serious?
Yeah, we're trying to branch those numbers down, right?
So wait, every 11 minutes when it was that, you know, every 11 minutes when you came up with that name, how long ago was that?
It was about 3 years ago.
So in the matter of 3 years, the same amount of people died, but in like half the time. So basically every 5 minutes a person dies from opioid overdose.
It's up to every 5 minutes now, and that the main perpetrator there being fentanyl.
Oh wow!
And so when I was a heroin addict, I want to say 2018, 2019, the beginning of 2020, There was black tar heroin. I don't know what I can say on this podcast or what I can't say.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine.
I'm good?
Yeah, okay. You're good.
Yeah, so for me, it started with Norcos, which are hydrocodone. A lot of people don't know, but these pain pills that they push you, that the doctors push to you, they're very addicting. You know, this is actually the beginning of the opioid crisis. Is I'm sure people are well aware, it was OxyContin.
Mm-hmm.
Which was in the early 90s, which started this whole thing. We'll probably get into that a little later, but I started with Norco, which is hydrocodone, acetaminophen, and got strung out on those. I tried to quit. I got sick, and I said, okay, well, how do I quit this thing? I looked into harm reduction. you know, lightweight, I was just trying to still stay high because they cut me off. And so I got on methadone, which was a very big mistake. And then something happened. I got in an altercation with somebody and got in a physical fight. And then they kicked me out of the methadone clinic. So someone had introduced me to heroin soon after. And so, yeah, heroin's a whole different, it's a whole different game, whole different beast. Because it's such an early onset when you're smoking. I hadn't started shooting yet, but it's just an instantaneous high, and it's not even about the high. It's about the, I guess, the chase of it.
Yeah.
You're so sick that it feels good once you feel normal. So basically you'll hear this term thrown around. I'm just trying to get well. But what getting well looks like is boosting from Home Depot or boosting from Friedman Brothers and selling electronic tools and laying people down and doing a bunch of evil stuff to get your money, and then you go flip it. And then that's the thing, is most of these people, they're like string up these fentanyl dealers, no mercy, give them life in jail and death sentence to all fentanyl dealers. Most of these dudes are just trying to support a habit. They don't even know how they got into it. You know, so the heroin, what would happen out here is the heroin would drought out, so everybody would be sick. And you'd be like, what's going on? There's literally no heroin. And then for about a week, everyone's bringing me money. Hey, once you cop, you got me. Yeah, I got you. I got you. I'm sitting on stacks of money. And then the new product hits. You buy the new product and get it off to everyone. And then there's bodies everywhere. And you're just like, wait.
Right.
What the? Is heroin is killing people? No, it's because they droughted it so they could introduce fentanyl. And pretty soon, all the heroin was gone, and it was all fentanyl. All the product was fentanyl.
Oh, wow.
And so you went from unknowingly overnight from a heroin addict to a fentanyl addict.
Oh, wow.
And now it's being disguised as other drugs.
Yeah.
The most. Yeah. I get weekly, I get fentanyl-laced marijuana, fentanyl-laced cocaine. Fentanyl-laced, of course, Percocet. And these kids are taking it unknowingly and dying in record numbers. 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds. I just got a 2-year-old, 1-year-old.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's crazy. And
yeah, it broke my heart. So with that, you said, like you said, with the hospitals and people being prescribed that, I thought that was super important that you said that, because a lot of people don't understand when they're looking at people from the outside looking in, and they're looking at people who are struggling with addiction, it's just like, you know, immediate like judgment almost. But it's like you said, it's like it only takes for you to maybe break a leg or get into a car accident, and they're giving you pain medicine, but it's like you don't know what type of effect that's having on someone. So
yeah, here, I'll bring it. Yeah, go ahead. I mean, cut you off.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead.
No, I could break it down to you like this, right? So what's the most perfect day you could think of for you?
The most perfect day?
Yeah. What's a picturesque day for you? A whole day?
So I would say waking up, of course. You know, getting my kids up.
That's always good, right?
Right. Waking up, getting my kids, you know, up and ready for school, breakfast, and then off to school. Then, you know, getting some things done for the podcast. I have another business that I run. So getting, you know, I have a daily goal list. So being able to check off everything on my daily goal list, that would make a great day.
Go.
Maybe grabbing lunch with a colleague, you know, getting some, you know, other errands ran, then coming home, getting the kids from school, cooking dinner, cleaning the home, and, you know, really just spending time with my boys. That's really a perfect a day for me.
Right. Like you feel like you're serving your purpose.
Yeah, serving my purpose. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now add to that, we're going to add to that, that you won the lottery that day.
Oh, yeah. That'd be lovely.
Okay. So all of that your purpose-driven life. You're smashing all your goals. And on top of that, you won the lottery, right?
Yeah.
So that's that day, that perfect day is going to give you maximum, I want to say 75 to 100 nanograms per centiliter of dopamine. Okay?
Okay.
So an average, someone with a substance use disorder, they inject heroin or say meth. Can you imagine, or just try to guess how much dopamine that is?
I don't know.
And we're going to compare that to 75 to 100 nanograms per centiliter. So when you use that drug, you're getting anywhere from 900 to 1100 nanograms per centiliter when you use that drug.
Oh, wow.
So compare 100 to, you know, 1100. That's quite a difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what happens is your transmitting neurons are shooting neurotransmitters to your receiving neurons and your receptors. And so it's an overflow of neurotransmission in your synaptic vesicle, I think it's called, synaptic vesicle. And you can't compare that to anything. So your perfect day, you want to have your perfect day over and over and over again. Am I right? That's what we're striving for.
Yeah.
Right. So these people that we're so quick to judge, that there's such a stigma about, these people are trapped in a dream.
Literally
trapped in a dream. And the things that you got to do to get these drugs, it's insane. It's, you're literally, the best way I can describe it is your body is taking your soul on a sick ride through hell. Like your soul doesn't, your soul's pretty, you're keeping your soul captive, but your body needs what it needs. And so it just takes you to the depths.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, I've never had it broke down in that way. So scientifically, like descriptive and like really in detail. But I can imagine, you know, someone being told that or just even experiencing that, you know, chasing that, especially just with everything that life has to offer. You know, you have your ups and downs. And though as I got older and I started to grow spiritually, I learned that that is the beauty in life, is that every day is not perfect, and that you have to find the beauty in the not so perfect days. I can understand that. And even I was going to ask you, you know, too, because, you know, in the urban music and the music that we hear and these rappers and things like that, they describe it in that sense, kind of in a glorified way, but just in a different, they don't, you know, break it down like as such as you did, but you hear them saying these things about, you know, popping pills and things like that. So how would you say, do you think that has the impact on these younger kids choosing to do these and do these things and thinking that it's cool because they're hearing it in the music, they're hearing these rappers and artists say how great they feel when they're rolling and whatever, you know, terminology they use when they're describing their high, in a sense?
Yeah. So an artist that comes up on my radar a lot is Juice WRLD.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Who, you know, his life tragically ended from, you know, his plane was getting pulled over and he took an excess amount of, I think it was painkillers, right? His perks, I think. So, of course, I heard about Juice WRLD here and there, but that's why it's so cool that I have this job. I'm a drug counselor, and I didn't really get to that, but I'm a drug counselor now. And more than anybody probably on the staff, I will get the someone with a fentanyl use disorder.
Okay.
And so I like to do this group called Music Therapy, where, so you have different people, different races, creeds, backgrounds. That's what's so cool about a rehab is, you know, coming back from what we were just talking about and then being back with your tribe again, you know, being social again. And so in these music therapies, each individual gets to select a song of their choice, something that gives them an emotional charge. And then everybody gives their undivided attention. They listen to the song, and then the person explains why they chose that song. And then I had a young man choose Juice WRLD. I think it was Lean With Me. And I don't, like I said, I don't know what I can say on the podcast, but there's some, the lyrics in it are basically about drug use.
Okay.
And she's got a real nice beat. Really, it's just really, hypnotizing.
Oh, okay.
His voice, you know, Juice WRLD, his voice and the instrumentals. It's kind of haunting because when you listen to the dude rap, he's yelling, help me. He's like, help me. You know what I mean? He's struggling. You can tell. And people are like, yeah, help you. All right, pop another perk.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this kid showed me this, and I was like, damn, that was amazing. So I've been listening to a few more of his songs, and just really for the beat at first, but to listen to his lyrics, it's a whole thing. Dude was definitely had a substance use disorder, and he was struggling. And I don't know if the people around him helped him.
Right.
So yeah. He helped himself.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's the thing. It's like a lot of people typically are affected when someone that you love or someone who is dear to you is struggling, but you never really understand it fully until you're in that situation. You know what I'm saying? I kind of, you know, related to when I first started dealing with like anxiety, and I used to just isolate myself and not want to be around people because I felt as if I didn't want to be looked at differently, or I didn't want people to, you know, judge me or whatever. And then I didn't also want to have to try to explain or feel like I had to get people to try to understand, because I felt like no matter however I describe it, no matter however I try to explain to someone the feeling or what I'm going through, it's like unless they've felt it or have experienced it, they're not going to fully understand. And so it's not going to make sense to them. You get what I'm saying? But absolutely. When you have those people around you that really love you, their goal is not to try to understand. Their goal is to just love you and be there and support you. And so once you have those people around you, it becomes that much easier, because it's like, I don't have the weight of like trying to get you to understand me. Now it's just the fact that I know that you're there. And if I need you, you're there. You're going to love on me. You're going to speak life into me. You're going to support me, you know? And I think that that is so important, you know, because it is, it's difficult. It's difficult to explain to someone. Like you said, even you breaking it down how you did, it's like, I still will never fully understand that because I've never felt that, you know?
Yeah, and thank God for that.
Right. So just to kind of backtrack again too, because I didn't want to miss anything. So
that's fine.
With your recovery and going through everything, I know that you said you overdosed a number of times. So going back in those moments, like, what was it like for you? Because one thing, you know, people say is like, okay, these people are not fearful of death. They're not fearful of death, you know, because you see people out here, you know, dropping like flies, like you said, from every 11 minutes to every 5 minutes. That is insane. I mean, we've been on this, we've been on this segment for 20 minutes now. So that means that in the past 20 minutes, four lives have ended. That is heartbreaking. That is so heartbreaking. Yeah. So for you, what would you say was like that moment that you were like, look, I don't want to be that close to death again?
Man. So the high that you're chasing after, right? So I'll just start at the beginning. I was in the back of a truck, and I was a youngster. I was like 15, and we were going out to this abandoned mansion. We had some pony kegs in the back. Dude was drunk driving. I was in the back of the truck, and then it flipped over into a ravine. The truck landed on top of me, crushed my homie, and I barely made it out alive.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm in the hospital and just kind of going over the events, just kind of in shock and trauma. And I had a homegirl. She was cleaning out the wounds in my hands. And she's kind of like singing softly to me. And I have the warm hospital sheets, you know, tucked up over me. And I'm in a little pain. And then all of a sudden, I feel the best I've ever felt in my life. I feel safe. I feel tingly, warm. I feel like I'm being held by God. What I didn't know was they're injecting me with morphine.
Oh, wow. So they were giving you pain meds and they didn't even tell you?
They told me afterwards. I was like, what was that? They're like, we gave you some pain medication, some morphine. You'll be all right.
Oh, wow.
As soon as they said that, as soon as I knew what that was, I was sold. The seed was planted for life. I didn't seek it out right away, but I always remembered that. I know I was 15 years old. I didn't know what it was or right. What was going down, but I found that again when I found heroin, and I chased it till I couldn't chase it anymore. And the best highs I ever had were on the edge of death. It's right where you're not dead, but you're not really alive. You're just kind of in that phantom nod. You're in that. You're like right on the riverboat at the edge of death. Just
so like unconscious.
Yeah, not even unconscious, because you don't know when you're nodding. The worst thing I ever seen was a video of me nodding. I was like, "That's me? What? Right. Hella vulnerable out here."
Yeah.
But so I chased that a long time, died. I was revived. I remember they dropped my body off on the corner of Piner and Marlowe, and I died in some trap house. And as soon as I happened to have a shot on my property, so as soon as they revived me with the Narcan, I'm like, I got to get through this wall. I have to get through this Narcan wall. And so I did a shot in the lobby at the hospital. The nurse that helped revive me came in like, what are you doing? I'm like, get out.
Wow.
So yeah, it's the last time that happened. I was in jail for, I think, 4 months, and I got out and I said, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to drink. Mm-hmm. I made a promise to myself. And so I'm just drinking tall cans every day. And I was in the right opportunity, the right spot, and the girl I was with, I didn't have to talk her into it too much, and she made me like a watered down shot of what we call Red Rock out here, which is it's fentanyl.
Okay.
It was like a heroin fentanyl. That's all fentanyl. So she made me a watered down shot. I shot the little bit, and I was like, there's that magic feeling. This time I'm probably not coming back. I came out of it. I noticed there at the end of the garage, and they had left my needle there with a full cap. And I pulled back the syringe all the way, and then I shot myself up. And supposedly, and I don't remember this, but I died for about 10 to 15 minutes. Luckily, the girl there had a couple of Narcans on her. She Narcan me once. I didn't come back. She Narcan me again. I didn't come back. And then she started doing chest compressions, and I came back.
Oh, wow.
That was a big wake-up call. It wasn't like I had a near-death experience or anything like that, but I don't know how to explain it. It was like I was on into that void. I was at the threshold where I was like, damn, what did I do? I messed up. I knew I would mess up eventually. Like I was kind of like out of body. I can't really explain it in words, but I knew I had gone into that darkness. And if I died like that, I'm not so sure where I'd be going. And so that was kind of spooky. And it really had my gears turning. It really made me think, damn, am I going to go back out? She offered me some right after that, a couple hours after that. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go home.
Wait.
I was waiting.
The woman who revived you offered you another hit of the drugs that nearly killed you, and you were hours later? Oh, yeah. Wow.
And so I was like, you know what? I want to go home, and I don't know. Maybe we'll go. because I was supposed to turn myself in to go to rehab for 6 months, but I would have to go to jail for a couple months and wait for a bed. And so I'm like, I'm not doing that. You know, I'm used to having warrants and running and stuff like that. And so I'm just going to go home for a minute, rest up, and then hit the streets again. So I go to my parents' house. My daughters are there. I have two, well, I have three daughters, but my two daughters were there. I forget how old they were, at about probably about 5 and 7, I would imagine. Yeah, probably about 5 and 7 years old. My baby's mom was up from Colorado staying up here. And they all went to bed. I'm at the house and the girl's hitting me off the chain. And I'm just like, I think I'm going to go back out. And then I'm like, damn, if I go back out, I feel like I'm really going to die this time. Is it worth it? I don't know. I'm going back and forth, back and forth. I'm like, well, I have the opportunity to turn myself in tomorrow. What am I going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, I'm going to go back out, but I'm going to do one last human thing, right? So I decided to sit in my dad's chair and watch a movie. There's a new movie out. I think it was Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. And so I used to like movies. Like, that was the last human part of me. Like, I like to watch movies every now and then because I was so, you know, out of it from drugs. I sat there and I'm watching this movie and I'm decided, you know, I'm going to go back out. And something eerie started happening. I'm watching the screen and I'm thinking, did I bring something back with me from the darkness? Which sounds crazy, right? And all of a sudden I'm sitting in the chair and I'm paralyzed. I can't move. I'm trying to will myself up to move. And I don't know if you've ever had a terror by night or paralysis. It's basically a demonic attack.
Okay.
And so I can't move. I'm trying to will myself up. And something tells me, I hear it audibly, that we bite on the way down. And as soon as it said this, something put its hand over my left eye and it took it back. And then something pinched me on my right elbow. It was hella spooky.
Yeah, that's.
I got up. I got up. I started praying incessantly. I started, you know, I cast you out in the name of the Lord Jesus, and God help me, and call a hedge of protection, call Michael the archangel to defend me in battle, and it went away. And then, so not audibly, but God told me, go into the room, and I went into the room, and I seen my daughters there sleeping. And I'm thinking, what have I been doing, dude? Look at these little angels. What am I doing?
Yes.
And so I turned myself in the next day. And that was my last overdose.
That's so amazing. You know, just even like every day, everything down to, you know, you feeling the need to pray and calling on the name, you know, Jesus. And that is so, that's so amazing. With that, you know, I know you said that your daughters were in the next room. I was just going to ask you that too. Like, how do you think, like, what was the effect on your kids? You know, you said they were younger.
Yeah.
So like, how was that relationship, you know, during that time when you were experiencing your worst part of addiction?
So I was very good at hiding my addiction. At least I thought I was good at hiding it.
Right.
Since they were babies, I was in their life, but, you know, I wasn't really there.
Okay.
Just like today I woke up, I felt everything. I felt the sun on my face. I felt connected with all things around me. Then I wasn't connected. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
No, I was just going to say, I completely can relate on the opposite side of like being a child who, you know, had two parents who struggled with addiction majority of my childhood. So, you know, I know that connection, that void of having a relationship and having that connection with my parents, but, you know, not truly understanding it because you're just a kid. But I do remember, and I can recall the feeling of like, you know, searching for the value, like, do my parents love me, or, you know, do they care about me? Like, you know, really just as a kid, just really confused because you see other kids and their relationships with their parents, and you're not purposely comparing them. But as a kid, that's where your mind goes. You're like, oh, wow, well, why isn't my dad showing up for this? Or why isn't my mom here for this? You know, I was moved around a lot, and I was raised for a nice chunk of my childhood by my grandmother. So both my parents were really absentee to their, in their addiction. But, you know, as now I'm an adult and I have a more understanding and I'm able to give them grace, but I do remember, you know, feeling like that. And I think that that's really what was the determining factor for me, because I grew up in a generation where that became cool, you know, popping pills and getting high. And I have, you know, used marijuana, and I started smoking at a young age, but I was always like, oh, it's just weed. It's, you know, it's no problem. But even, you know, like you say, you know, just even being careful of like who you're smoking with or watching them roll. But I used to always say, like, I don't never want to feel like I need this or I have to have this, because I seen what that did to my parents, and I seen what they were willing to sacrifice and what they missed out on by choosing, you know, that, or by having that struggle.
So addiction, if it exists, it's going to transmute or transcend to the person that's close enough to you, whether that's neglect, whether that's addiction itself transferring. It happens in the family system just like that. I come from, you know, parents that definitely drank and used, and I love my parents. Now we have a great relationship, but I didn't have the safest childhood, right?
Yeah.
And when I remember just experiencing alcohol for the first time, like, oh my God, I'm safe.
Yeah.
I'm safe now.
And
this is my new best friend, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
With my oldest daughter, she's 25. She's fighting addiction right now. So.
Oh, really?
I tried to show up and be consistent. I did. And then I tried to show up as a counselor. And then I tried to just show up as a friend again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started showing up as a father. So what hat do I got to wear to defeat this thing? You know, you feel so helpless as a parent. You know, it's probably as helpless as she felt as my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So now that has transferred from my daughter to the mother of that child. It just hit me up. Sure, it's her choice, but this disease is so cunning, powerful, and baffling. You can't wrap your mind around it.
No, for sure.
And I go to school. Yeah, I do this, you know, 40 hours a week, and I go to school for it to learn it. And it's just so confusing. It's a good fight to be in, but man.
Yeah, no. And, you know, that's so important. And I appreciate you sharing that and being open about that, because it truly is a disease, and it does affect more people around you. Maybe, you know, if not directly, indirectly, whether they see it, they hear it, whatever, you know what I'm saying? It just, you never get to choose how it affects you later or who it affects around you.
And yeah, biopsychosocial, that would be the social part.
Yes, so true. And so I appreciate you opening up and being open about that.
Absolutely.
And, you know, with you, what you're doing with your platform is, I think, amazing. Telling
Thank
the
you.
Stories for these families, sharing their stories, giving them a voice. I know that it's not easy for them. And then even you having to put that out there, like you said, even with the 2-year-old, like, that is so heartbreaking. A 2-year-old getting a hold of such a deadly, you know, drug.
Yeah, rest in peace, Nevaeh Wallace.
Yes, rest in peace. Like, that's insane. So, like, what pivoted you? Like, what started that where you started your pages and you started to want to put other stories out there?
Yeah, being a survivor of the opioid crisis, it only made sense to me to tell stories of recovery, but also tell stories of awareness and depth and the reality of it, the nature. I've lost more than a handful of friends. Rest in peace, Carlos Noreto, Ryan Hughes, Donald Harvey, Timon Nicholson, Casey Calder, Noah Garcia. The list goes on and on. It's pretty bad out here in Sonoma County too. I started doing events out here to try to highlight the fentanyl epidemic that's going on, not just in Sonoma County, but, you know, San Francisco, the Tenderloin. It's a damn war zone out there right now.
Oh, really?
So through a couple events for the homeless situation out here, and then realized, you know, this is good. We're helping the homeless, but what are we doing for them besides feeding them? Right. So we did this event called Summer Aid with Impact Foundation. And we fed the homeless, but we also got them clothes and hygiene and haircuts and, you know, clothes. And then also when they left, there was a booth set up. If you're a veteran, we got a booth for you. You want a COVID shot, we got a COVID shot. You want to get into rehab, we have a booth set up for that. And I thought, hey, we're really doing something with this. So started throwing more events like that, and then went on a social media platform, learned the intricacies of social media through TikTok and Facebook and Instagram, and just started putting it out there, putting the awareness out there, and literally reached tens of millions of people. It's crazy.
No, for sure. I was going to say, I think you have like over 300,000 followers on Instagram. And yeah. I'm not sure how many on TikTok, but yeah, like that's so great. Like the fact that one, you were once going through the same struggle, you even experienced, you know, near death, and then yeah. Reevaluating your life and being able to get a second chance and taking that second chance to make a difference and to give back and give a platform to others is amazing. That's truly what it takes to be chosen and faithful to what the Lord is calling you to do, to give back.
All praise to the Lord. All praise to Jesus Christ on that one.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen to that. I think that is so amazing. Like, truly, that's what happened. You know, I stumbled upon your page and I seen these stories and I was like, wow. I didn't even know it was that bad. Because if it's not directly affecting you, you don't know. Excuse me. You don't know.
Yeah, fentanyl, it affects your city, your community, your state, your country, you. It affects you. It's only a matter of time before it comes around and affects you. So,
yeah.
I monitor what's said on the page as much as I can. I understand there's a lot of negativity and a lot of people going against what I'm trying to do, but you know, I can't stop, won't stop. So
yeah, and that's, you know, that's expected. You know, whenever you're doing what the Lord has chosen you to do, what the enemy is going to do is come and try to steal, kill, and destroy that, your purpose, you know?
Absolutely. I don't take it personally. Most of these people, it's a cry for help when it comes down to it. It's because defense always confirms accusation, right?
Correct. Yeah. True.
Most of these people are either, they have wounds that we can't see, or it hasn't came around to them yet, and it will. Whatever doesn't come out in the wash comes out in the rinse. Am I right?
Yeah, that's so true. And that's so. It's so sad that, you know, people would rather be used in that manner, you know, being negative when we're talking about lives that are lost. 2-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 13-year-olds. These are kids who are innocent, who don't even know the dangers. They don't know. Maybe they never stumbled upon your page. Maybe those who do stumble upon your page, they will rethink and reconsider, do I want to go smoke this joint with Joe Smo after school? Maybe not, because, hey, it may have it. It may not have any fentanyl in it. I don't know.
I believe that. I believe that because people have commented on that. You see them tagging their kids in it. Pay attention to this. And it's that absolutely outweighs any kind of negativity that I'm coming across or any kind of hate. That's fine. I'll take that. You know, it's water off a duck's back. I don't take it personally.
For sure. I mean, it sucks. You know, I have a 5-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I'm already having to have conversations with my 12-year-old about, you know, he's just now starting to take Tylenol and ibuprofen. So I have to tell him, you don't take it from nobody but me. And that sucks, you know? That sucks. Because he's like,
well, it's a whole different world.
Yeah, and he doesn't understand that. And it's sad that I have to break it down to him like that and almost be like, yeah, you can't trust anybody. You know, because there's kids that may really think they're giving you a Tylenol. Hey, they don't know what their parents may have. You see kids nowadays on the news taking what they think are gummies to school and they're filled with THC or whatever, you know?
We had a case with those too, with I think it was a Delta 9 gummy. Someone had, I don't know, somehow got contaminated and then someone had died off that.
Wow, see?
It's wild, right? Because I don't want to be a fear monger and I absolutely believe in harm reduction. But it's just not that world anymore. You literally can't. In the world I grew up in, did I experiment? Hell yeah, I experimented. But we didn't have to worry about being buried at 12, 13 years old from going out and doing a line of coke or something like that. Like, it's different. The trajectory has changed. You will die. Don't trust anything. Literally, you have to be abstinent. If you're going to smoke weed, grow it yourself. Grow it yourself. Or go to a club. And that's not even that safe.
When you say club, do you mean like the dispensaries?
Yeah, go to the dispensaries. But yeah. I can't even say that. I can't even say that's 100% safe.
That's scary. Yeah, like you said, it's just bringing that awareness. Giving people the knowledge, because it's truly just ignorance. You know, it just comes from not knowing. And like you said, what used to just be a smoke session after school could easily turn into somebody being laced and losing their life. And kids, they get scared. They don't know how to react in that moment. They may not have cans of Narcan around. They probably don't even know what Narcan is. So they're probably just, you know, running off and maybe leaving their friend there not knowing that they're dying. They're just like, oh, maybe they're having a bad reaction or whatever. You never
know. Every American should have Narcan readily available. The government should make this a thing. You're like, everybody should have Narcan readily available, have one on them at all times the way it is. Fentanyl test strips should not be illegal. That's insane. I'm pretty sure they're illegal in most states in America. It's crazy. And now you got xylazine to worry about. So this is Narcan resistant. It's called, Trank. They call it Trank, which is showing up everywhere now. And then so people are ODing, and then you go to Narcan them and nothing. It's Narcan resistant because it's an animal tranquilizer.
Oh, wow. So what is Narcan?
Narcan is a blocker and it's basically a blocker. It's an antagonist. So the opioids go into the receptor and it's so much neurotransmission that it starts to mess with the central nervous system, which makes someone stop breathing and they die. When they get hit with Narcan, that blocker is so strong, it goes into the receptor and binds to the receptor and kicks the opioid out.
Oh, so it kind of reverses the effect.
It's like a polysynaptic effect.
Oh, wow. And is it free? Could you get it for free from places, or you have to pay for it? Like, where would you buy this from? Where would someone who needs this, where would they be able to find? Is this something you could buy over the counter?
Yeah. If you're, you can buy them over the counter at like CVS, Rite Aid, or you can go to, like for here, we have a place called Face to Face, but they'll only give you so many. So you can get them at a prescription store unprescribed. And I think it's like $40-$50 for one. But if you're a nonprofit with a 501c3, you can literally get like crates of this stuff shipped to you. If you go through Next Distro, well, I think it's nextdistro.com. Where it's Narcan distribution. Just literally Google Narcan distribution in my county. So many people hit me up about this. And I'm like, where are you from? Nevada. You just literally Google Nevada free Narcan. Very simple to do.
Got you. Okay.
Yeah.
That's definitely important. And, for people to know, especially, like I said, even for these younger kids who still might want to explore and, do those things, it's like, at least try. I would never encourage anyone to do that, but like, at least be proactive and be knowledgeable. And,
everybody needs to talk to their kids about fentanyl. And trust me, trust and believe. If you have a teenager, you're not going to have a freaking camera on them at all times. Do people want to blame the parents? Nah. Listen, they got availability. They got supply. All they need is a life stressor, and they're definitely going to experiment with drugs. It doesn't matter if their friend just died. They're going to. So that's a reality we need to accept. And we need to accept that this is an internal problem in the United States. We want to blame Mexico. We want to blame China. Listen, we can clean up this shit right here in our backyard. With enough awareness, we could do that. This is a problem that started here with the opioid epidemic from the OxyContin, started by the Sacklers in the early 90s. You had these... And this is all from greed. These people sent these, medical companies, or I'm sorry, pharmaceutical companies out to these rural pockets all throughout the Midwest and North America. And they finessed these doctors. They gave them incentives to push this painkiller onto America. So what you're seeing right now is the fallout. You're seeing the grandchildren, if not great grandchildren, of this 90s epidemic.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
It's Purdue is responsible for all these deaths.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, you're teaching me something here. And that's why I wanted to have you on. I just felt that, that I would be able to learn something, but that also I would be able to, offer... this knowledge to our listeners, because it is very important. And I feel like it's not talked about enough in a sense of like what we can do to fix it. We talk about the impact that it's having, the effect that it's having on people and in our communities, but we're not talking enough about what we can do to fix it, what we can do to make change, and where it did start, and, giving people a more of an understanding, so that we're not just sitting around passing judgment and saying shoulda, coulda, woulda, or couldn't be me, wouldn't be me, those type of things. When you have the knowledge, you have the background, you have someone who's like, hey, I've been there, that gives you a different understanding. It gives you a different compassion. It gives you a different drive to try to make change, And I think that's so important.
I wouldn't take a day back. I don't have any regrets.
I appreciate that you agreed to come on and speak with us and give us those gems and those tips, because, like you said, I felt so touched when I had reached out to you and you said you would be willing to come on. But not only that you were willing to come on, but that you prayed about it and that you got confirmation to do so. And that just also gave me confirmation that this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to provide whatever you know, support and whatever knowledge that we can to those who are, who will listen.
Yeah. The She Bold podcast. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Yeah. She Bold Crew. Yep.
Anointed by God, man. I'm telling you.
I appreciate that so much. We appreciate that Chosen. So much. Yeah.
Chosen ones right here.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we love that, you know, anyone who comes onto the podcast, we pray that you do feel, you know, called to do so, because there is a bigger purpose. And we just want to connect and be a support to you as well. What you're doing is nothing short of amazing. And you deserve, you know, recognition for that. No, for sure. Like, that's so true. Like, I can't imagine going through what you've gone through and coming out and saying, hey, not only am I going to change my life, but I'm going to try to change and save as many lives as I can. Because, you know, it's some people, they'll go through things and they'll come out of them. The Lord will bring them out of it and they will just go on about their life and be thankful for that. But, and that's okay too. Everybody's not meant to be or called to be, chosen to be, a, you know, an anointed person to go save others. But you said, no, I'm not going to just save myself. I was bought back for a reason. I was given a second, a third chance for a reason. And that is important, you know? And I just want to encourage you today that, you know, regardless of whatever the enemy tries to throw in your way, whatever roadblocks, whatever, you know, things he tried to do to destroy what it is that you set out to do, with every 11 minutes, continue to do that. Because, yeah, you're going to have those spiritual warfares. You're going to be under attack. But
I'll take it. It's worth it. Yeah, listen,
it's so worth it.
I would much rather choose adventure over security.
For sure.
And no one wants to ride on a flat roller coaster. Am I wrong?
Yeah. No.
Let's go.
And the fight is definitely worth the reward. It's so worth the reward. And so we're rooting you on here. We're supporting you, you know, from the other side of the world. We're all the way across the world, you know, but we're supporting you. You know, we're following what it is that you're doing. And, you know, hopefully we can connect more and, you know, be able to be a part of and play a part of, be a support of the movement that you have. Because it is such a big movement and it's so important and it's needed today. It's needed.
It really is.
And like we always say, people gonna trust somebody who's been there, done that, more than maybe someone who is just like, hey, you know, I want to help you, you know, but not really being able to understand where that person is coming from. You can understand firsthand.
Yes, I know the darkness very well.
Yeah, so for sure. And just before, you know, I want you to give your social media handles and all that information so that the listeners know how to follow you, how to follow the movement, and know how to find you.
Absolutely. TikTok, it's at every 11 minutes, just how it sounds. At every 11, two ones, minutes, at every 11 minutes. And then my Instagram IG handle is at every.11.minutes. And we just had a Facebook get hacked, so trying to combat that right now. But just put up another Facebook, so it's at, and then, I don't know what those two dots are called. An ellipsis, is that what it's called?
What is it?
You know, the two dots, like whatever. It's at two dots ellipsis 11 minutes.
Okay.
So. You told me before, what is your what the hell moment?
Yeah, we didn't get to do the WTH moment in the beginning, but I'm glad you came back to it. So, yeah, you have a WTH moment you want to share with us?
Yeah, so I'm not going to be able to probably reply to this client, but after I got off the phone with you, I went to boxing, and I'm on my way back from boxing, and I got this email from a past client. So I can't say his name, because it would be a HIPAA violation. Yeah. But so, yo, Jeremy, it's, your name has been stricken from the narrative. Hope all is well with you. Sorry I missed seeing you on my last day at Align. That's where I work, Align Recovery Centers. Big shout out. I just want to say that Align totally changed my life, and my experience there was one of the greatest of my life. You were such a huge part of that. you are one of the most inspiring people I've ever met. You showed me more than anyone that recovery just isn't necessary, but it's beautiful and hella fun. I'm enjoying life at the SLE. I'm here. It's great having blank here. Can't say his name. Mm-hmm. We're a good duo when it comes to keeping each other accountable. My court case is still dragging on, but I'm not stressing about it. I'm doing IOP Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. I just started last week, but I really like it so far. It was kind of a trip leaving a line after 90 days. At first, I just wanted to be back there because it became my home, but I'm getting used to life on the outside, and it's pretty great not to be thinking about drinking. Just wanted to tell you, so you know all is good, and you played a huge part in truly making me believe a sober life is not only possible, but better. I don't miss any of that stuff I was doing before. As always, beyond grateful for you and hope you're having a good day. Much love, bro.
That's so dope. And that's what it's about.
Yeah, like I wouldn't trade that right there for my best high.
Yeah.
At all. You can't. That's the real stuff. That's the authenticity. That is the roller coaster. That's the, you know, I was on a 90-day journey with this young man. And, man, it's, I can't even explain it. It's all these golden moments. And I get to be front row seat, you know, at the best movie in the world. And it's my life.
Absolutely. And you're,
it's awesome.
Yeah. And you're fully awakened and aware of everything, you know? And I think that is so important. Cause like we said in the beginning, you know, life is full of ups and downs, but there's beauty in all of it. And you just have Absolutely. To really be open to receive that. And if you can't find it, you know, being able to lock in with yourself and take that time to reflect and have that divine time to really figure that out. But it does take time and everybody's journey is different, but that is amazing. That's so beautiful. And that's how I feel, you know, similar to when I get, you know, contacted our inboxes about the podcast and just the message that we put out there, because though I love to talk and meet new people and, you know, there's beauty in that, but there's also beauty in being able to have someone say, hey, like, you really made a difference for me, or hey, that's what I needed to hear. You know, when I thought about ending it all, you
matter,
and your words of inspiration that changed that, you know, just being able to say, you know, I'm this much closer to doing what the Lord has me to do, you know,
that's God showing off right there.
Yeah. There's nothing that we could ever do to earn and deserve the love of God, but we can always work at it. No matter what, we can always work at it. And that's what it's about. So I love
all the character flaws that I still have. And yeah. I'm able to be seated in heaven with God right now as we're on this podcast.
Yes.
How crazy is that?
Amen. It's so beautiful. And I'm just so thankful for this moment. I'm thankful for you. Thank you for taking the time out and sharing that information with us and being open and transparent. It's such a beauty in being able to own, you know, your journey. And I love that for you. And like I said, I hope that this is not just a one-off. I hope that we can connect more, and that whenever it is that you're having events or whatever, though you're in California and we're here in Ohio, we're just a flight away. And at the end of the day, we're just a call away. So it's nothing for us to connect and push that out there, you know, and do a podcast or whatever we need to do to get that support out there.
I'm with it. Let's do it.
Yes. Did you want to leave anything else you wanted to say? You want to leave with the listeners before we end today?
Just much love and respect to everybody out there. You know, stay woke and choose wisely.
Yes.
I don't mean be woke. You know what I mean? I'm not using that phrase woke. What I mean is wake up, open your eyes, look at your, Be aware of your surroundings, because it's not worth your life.
Absolutely.
And then I'll just drop this. One of my favorite verses from the Bible, Ephesians 6:12. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world and against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly realms. That's it.
Amen. Yes. Well, I appreciate you again, and we thank you so much for having you here, my co-host. She was so sad she couldn't be here today. She was ready and amped for this segment, but I know she's going to love, you know, to hear the delivery. And like yeah. I said, you know, this isn't going to be our last time. So, you know, we're excited to see what else you do with every 11 minutes, and we're in support of that in any way that we can help. Don't hesitate to reach out to us. And, yeah. You know, we're locked
Thank
in now.
You.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you again for taking the time. You could have been anywhere else doing anything else, but you took the time to speak with us today. So we appreciate yep. that. And until next time, guys, stay bold.